Welcome to another episode of the USA Powerlifting Podcast. Today, we talk to President Larry Maley and International Chair Wade Johnson. All right, everyone, welcome back to an episode of the USA Powerlifting Podcast. It's your favorite host in the world, Ryan Carrillo, and I'm joined by everyone's favorite president, Larry Maley. Larry, how's it going?
So far, so good.
You know, I haven't seen you in a bit, and it was good to see you recently. We live so close to each other, yet so far sometimes with how frequently you're traveling. And you've been busy lately, right? Tell us a bit about what's been going on with USA Powerlifting. We're towards the end of Q1 here. I've seen some of the numbers in our growth, and I'm frankly shocked. I don't believe it. You know, I have to imagine for you who have been in this chair for so long, who has been in the organization decades now, what we're seeing is really exciting. Can you tell us a bit about what's on your mind and what's going on with USA Powerlifting right now?
Sure. One of the remarkable things, and as you recall, we ended last year with more than 32,000 members. And in our mind, that was really unprecedented. We were really not sure we could ever duplicate that. But what we found in the first quarter of this year is that we're up even further, basically about 10% up over the same period last year. And that was a record growth year. And so it really underscores for us that our mission, basically, and interestingly, we are now revising our mission statement to reflect all of the things we do. Our mission really continues to be relevant. And it is especially relevant to local level lifters. Last year, we finished a year with 540 or 50 meets, I think. As of this time right now, we have sanctioned meets for this year that are approaching 500.
What?
So that's the ones that have occurred and those that are scheduled for the year.
In March, on March 26th, we have 500 meets already.
Yes.
That for those that don't understand, that is exponential growth, because 2-3 years ago, that was not the case. And we're already almost to where we ended last year. So this is indicative of folks coming and staying and competing across the country every weekend, right? Every weekend. Yeah,
there are multiple meets every weekend. And I was asked a question, interestingly, recently, do you go to all the meets? And my answer was, on some weekends, there are 25 meets. It's not possible. So that's the level of growth we're seeing, and it continues. I think it continues for a variety of reasons. One of the missions we had several years ago was really to make things uniform across meets across the country and now across the world, so that a person would know what to expect. And part of that component, if you just looked at the most recent Euro Tour meet in the Netherlands, part of that component was fun, exciting meet with good presentation and excitement. And I think that continues to be a product that people really are interested in, whether it be a meet in their local gym or whether it be at nationals. That continues to be exciting and to be a draw for people. We've also learned Definitely. That the powerlifting community in the United States, I was asked a question probably two decades ago, how many powerlifters are there in the United States? And my answer at that point was maybe 10,000. We have about a third of them. That was when we had a little more than 3,000 members, and the rest are distributed across other federations. And but the answer to that question would be different now. And the question would be, or the answer would be, 100,000, 200,000 people who consider themselves powerlifters in the United States. And that means that the market is basically untapped in terms of potential growth. And that's where we see ourselves going, to reach out and to appeal to those people, to reach out to meet directors, knowing that we will support them in providing a good quality competition, and that those results will matter.
Very well said, and really shocking numbers, for me at least. How do you feel about him, Larry? Like, obviously, you have a plan 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead. Did you ever think we'd have 30,000+ members and then be looking at higher numbers even into the first quarter of this year?
Well, I think years ago we saw the potential for it, but we really never realized that it was so close, basically, until we really hit about 15,000 members. And then we realized that there are many more people out there. There are many more meets possible. And the growth really could be almost unlimited.
Definitely. Let's talk for a moment, just because I want to be devil's advocate for folks out there who may feel a certain way. And, you know, I get frustrated when I see people commenting or complaining about certain things. And I just want to remind people to give us some grace. We're growing at an exponential rate, and we have a volunteer organization. We have leaders who are doing their absolute best to help us scale and maintain all of these standards that we've set. What are some of the things that we're doing to that end as we scale to ensure we have that continuity and consistency across 500 meets, across these nationals? How can we address any of those concerns people may have over tiny nitpicky things or significant things they may be upset about?
Well, I think it's interesting, and obviously, you know what I do professionally, and I'm conversant with the statistics on medical mistakes. The percentages of medical mistakes are 5 to 8%, basically. And when you think about that, it's frightening on the one hand, but when you consider that those are people who've spent their life doing it, it's really a kind of a things happen kind of situation. Everything doesn't always go to plan. That's even more so true for us. We're charting new territory here, and we are adding staff and we're adding volunteers. And some of the models that we used, simplistic kind of models, and you'll probably recall that there was a time when USA Powerlifting had one part-time employee. And so that person did every single thing. And as things grow, we continue to spin off tasks for people. We continue to find people who are qualified to pick up those tasks. And there's a learning curve for those people. Some things we try, they don't always work. They don't tend to be the most efficient way to do things. And so we're learning as we go. But I think that probably the take-home point, Ryan, is we're trying to learn. We see mistakes. We see them often before the people out there complain about them. And we look to fix them. Sometimes the fixes are not immediate. And at the end of the day, we are trying to fix things. We know what the complaints are, often before they're made, because we have the same complaints. And we start working on them. I think in some ways people have to be patient with us. We're building as we go. This has never been done before.
That is how scalability works in business, right? And I think we're doing a fine job. Like you say, we're already aware before they often happen, and we're already trying to iterate and improve. And small steps forward over a period of time make big gains. And so years from now, people won't remember those little tiny things. They'll just know the way that we make them feel on the platform. And that's the one thing that really separates us, I feel, as a state chair, as an athlete, who's very proud of how far we've come. On that note, one of the exciting things that we've added and is continuing to flourish is the Pro Series. I saw our executive committee member, Eric Cordero, share interesting stats yesterday. I don't recall the specific number, but we've given away a couple $100,000 to folks in the Pro Series already, haven't we?
Yes, we have. When you consider the Pro Series budget, the Pro Series budget is basically two things. It's the direct cash given away to reward good performances, and they're the indirect cost it cost us to run that program. When we envisioned a Pro Series, we were just leaving our former international affiliate, and that cost us $300,000 to $400,000. We reinvested that in the Pro Series, and we're essentially spending that in direct and indirect costs. to run a pro series competition isn't just a factor of we're going to give away 100,000 or 120 something we gave away at the Arnold. I can't remember the exact figure actually. But it's the production, it's making that meet run, it's bringing referees and bringing spotters and loaders from across the country. We have very gifted spotter teams that travel with us.
I was just going to say, shout out all the spotters and loaders, right, Larry?
Yep, they really are the best. And those are the costs that have to be built into running a meet. One of our objectives in running a pro series was to run something that was sustainable. And there have been a number of big money meets over the years. They've been one-off kind of meets. They've given away a lot of money to lifters.
I was just going to say, they're here for a year or two and they're gone, aren't they?
Most of them are. And so we wanted something that was sustainable. And to have something sustainable, you can't neglect both aspects of that. The aspect of actually providing the pros money for performance, but the aspect of making it such that we can provide the infrastructure. And you know, volunteerism is a great thing. We really survive on it. But at some point, volunteers get tired and they have spent all their money supporting our programs. And so you have to support them. You can't ask spotters and loaders, who are mostly college kids, to come at their own expense. You can't ask referees who our volunteers to come and pay their own tickets and hotel rooms and what have you. At some point you have to compensate them or at least make an effort. We can never pay for what they're worth, but make an effort to make it worth their while coming. So it's not too painful for them. And those are the two aspects that we concentrate on in making a viable, sustainable pro series. I want to say, and there's a number of rumors out there, and let me debunk them right now. The rumors are that we're sundowning the pro series. That's wrong. We have no intention of abandoning the pro series. We intend to continue. We continue to make it, to want to make it sustainable year after year after year. And we want to make it financially viable. So we're continuing to do that. We're adding some aspects to it this year that will be interesting, I think. And one of them is that we're going to pay people for American and world records this year.
Awesome.
And so we want elite level performances, and the crowd does too. And if you were at the Arnold or you saw the Arnold stream, when we announced this is a world record, the crowd, mostly, you know, crowd from Columbus, Ohio, and people who came in to see it, the excitement was palpable. They were thrilled to see a world record, whether it be a Master 4 world record, a junior world record, or an open world record. They were just excited to see that. And so we're going to build on that excitement. We're going to reward people for actually producing those performances for us on the Pro Series platform. We continue to invest in the different divisions. The largest one, obviously, is the Raw Open. I mean, honestly, it is, because that reflects the largest single portion of our membership. But proportional to the participation of the other divisions, bench, masters, equipped, we are still investing in those, and we hope that those continue to grow as well. So we continue.
Yeah, I have some questions. So I just want to be critical here, as I know people would want to be talking to you. Two things. I want to address the world records and then spreading the love around a few different divisions. So first, what do you have to say to those who say us naming world records and creating new world records, they don't like that? Well, what do you have to say to folks who are critical of us going down that path?
Well, you know, there's a reason, Ryan, why we're out here doing drug tested powerlifting at every level. And that reason is that we actually believe that it makes sense. And so there are other world records out there. There are world records that are not drug tested at all. There are world records out there that are not earmarked even in some of the drug tested federations to be tested. There are those that have so little testing. I'm looking at you, our former international affiliate, that to say that they're a drug-tested federation really is laughable. And so here's my answer to that. We believe that drug-tested world records are necessary, but we believe that the antecedents to those world records, people training in a drug-free environment, being subject to testing as they start as a novice, as they grow to be an elite lifter, as they become a prominent elite national lifter, are necessary to support those world records. And that's why we have them, because we have the infrastructure and the history to have as best as possible clean world records.
Very well said. And I think to those critical of this who say, well, how can a world record be a world record if it's just the United States? You're going to hear more about our international efforts from Larry and then Wade Johnson, our international chair. And the fact is, we are growing rapidly internationally, and our drug-tested infrastructure is now going to be from the local level to the international level in multiple countries, which is more than any other federation can say globally. So though right now the world records are only going to technically, I guess, be from a handful of countries, it is inevitable, the path that we're on, that in the future we're going to have dozens of countries pursuing these drug-tested global world records. Would you say that's the case, Larry?
Absolutely. And we're starting to see a few of them at this point. But I can tell you, just looking at the lifters out there and the lifters that are coming to us internationally, that there are people out there who can set those world records in other countries. I think, too, if you take a lesson from history, the first ever world championship had two countries, the U.S. and Great Britain. And, you know, you can look back and say that wasn't a real world championship, but it was the first of them. And that's where we are today. We're building on both our traditions, but we're building on history. And we're starting modestly and working carefully to build an international infrastructure.
It's exciting. When we can touch more on that here briefly, I just want to make sure we get everything said about the Pro Series that is on your mind. Is there anything else you want to say about the Pro Series this year and what folks have to look forward to? Obviously, people see this in social media. It's very public. You know, some of our Pro Series lifters have opted to forego the Pro Series this year, but I'm sure we anticipate them coming back in the future and we'll welcome them with open arms. But for those that are looking to pursue the Pro Series this year, any special message for them or the folks interested in trying to make the Pro Series their goal this year?
You know, I think the criteria are out there on the Pro Series website. We're currently doing some updates on it, but the criteria are out there for earning your pro card. And one of the interesting pieces of feedback we've gotten, and especially from master lifters, is that the prestige of earning a pro card is really significant to people. And so the criteria for that are out there. Please jump in, take your shot, earn your pro card. It's obviously more difficult to get to the Pro Series finals, but there is a Pro Series finals, and we haven't released where that will be this coming year. We're working on some things. I can tell you it will either be part of a large multi-sport festival, or we'll have a standalone Pro Series finals. But something will occur in terms of the finals, and we'll release that information when we have it. Please take your shot at it. You mentioned the people who have bypassed the Pro Series this year for other opportunities. And, you know, we don't see that as a bad thing necessarily. We know that lifters get punished if they compete with us. Interestingly, that's against European antitrust law and American antitrust law. But we're happy to have them come back. We're happy to have elite lifters lift with us. And, you know, I think what the take-home experience for them is going to be as they branch out to other pro-type events is that they're going to find that it's really a very difficult thing when you're not in a consistent, legitimate drug testing environment. And so the very best drug test lifters in the world may well face an uphill run. And when they find that discouragement, They've done their very best. They still are not on a level playing field. Come back, because we have one.
Yeah, we're here for you. We love to have you. We'll continue to be growing this pro series, and it'll be a destination for the best. That's for sure. So thanks for sharing that, Larry. Now I want to get to a topic that I know has been on our minds now for 5 years, basically. And we've had a development on what's been going on in Minnesota. I won't say any more. I'll let you kind of share the update that you're able to. So please, for those that are curious, can you update the organization on how things in Minnesota are looking and what the future looks like there?
Sure. Like all things legal, unfortunately, the end is not the end. So we're not at the end of that process. But just to look back historically, we had a discrimination complaint filed against us about 5 years ago, almost six now, in the Minnesota Human Rights Commission, alleging discrimination based on transgender status. As we worked through that process, that was withdrawn, and it was filed in district court in Ramsey County, Minnesota. And we proceeded with that process, the process being of discovery, of depositions, of trial preparation. And during the process of that, with settlement conferences scheduled, in fact, we were on the plane going to a settlement discussion. And the judge issued a summary judgment against us. Interestingly enough, included aspects that the plaintiff in the case didn't even ask for. Really, the judge at his own volition made determinations of disqualification of our experts, of disallowing our evidence. And on that basis, we thought that that was legally inappropriate, basically. We were denied due process. And so we appealed to the state of Minnesota Court of Appeals on essentially three points. That a summary judgment was inappropriate, there are rules governing that, and the judge didn't follow them. That there is a basis for excluding trans women from the women's division. Other than under certain circumstances, that being essentially that they have not gone through male puberty. And that the other point was that Minnesota, powerlifting in Minnesota, does not constitute a separate entity who then might aid and abet discrimination. Rather, each state organization is a part of USA Powerlifting and may only act on the strictures of USA Powerlifting. They're not independent entities. And so those were the three things that we filed appeals on in the Court of Appeals. They came back with a split decision, a 2-1 decision that affirmed the first two, that the judge had in fact disregarded some of the things that are necessary for appropriate due process, basically, and that we are entitled to a trial and we're entitled to present evidence. We are entitled to have experts and to defend our position. What that basically means is that unless the opposing party appeals to the Minnesota Supreme Court, they still have time to do that. We will be going back to trial at the district court level, where we will have our day in court. The second aspect has to do with discrimination. And here's a really significant and important point. We defended our argument that there are significant category level differences between men and women. And on that basis, fair play cannot be established if those who matured as male are allowed to compete in the women's division. The opposing counsel asked the appeals court to declare as a matter of law that gender is exactly the same as biological sex. The appeals court declined to do that. And so they left standing the biological principle that men and women are different and you can't just make yourself one or the other. That becomes important because it goes to the second point. The second point being that there may well be non-discriminatory reasons for excluding post-pubertal trans women from the women's division. It may well be based on evidence, and it may well be based on physiological differences. That was their term. And so that's a matter to be contested. The third one was probably very important to the members of USA Powerlifting Minnesota, because it says that they are not a separate entity and as such cannot aid and abet discrimination independently and be held liable for it. So in essence, by majority opinion, the Court of Appeals upheld our appeal on every count. There was one dissenting opinion who agreed with the judge at every turn on every single point, and that's really the nature of appeals. But it was remanded to the district court again, where the district court is cautioned to act with these factors in mind. So we will have our day in court. Excuse me. What does it mean for the people in Minnesota? It means that the injunction prohibiting us from doing business in Minnesota was reversed in its entirety. Members in Minnesota can join USA Powerlifting. We can hold meets in Minnesota. We are basically back in business in Minnesota. So that's probably, Ryan, a short summary of it.
You covered everything as succinctly as we could ask. I really have no questions. Very well covered, and I think you will have addressed many people's curiosity. And I guess timeline-wise, when do you think we'll be back in court? Towards the end of the year?
You know, it's really hard to tell. In some ways, it depends on several things. If they appeal to the Minnesota Supreme Court, that's a process. It's really like the appellate court. Takes a year to get through, basically. So that's a possibility. If we go back to the district court for trial, it could be set as soon as this summer, could be set in the fall, could be next year. That's really, to some degree, at the discretion of the district court and the will of the plaintiffs, honestly. That's a long way of saying I don't really have a good answer. Sometime okay. In the next year, we hope to know more.
All right. Thank you for the update. I want to wrap things up here with opportunity just to talk briefly about our international efforts. I do have time with Wade Johnson. Well, we've actually already talked at the time of this recording. So if you want, you can give like a high-level executive overview and tee up Wade's segment of this podcast.
Sure. You know, our as I said earlier in the podcast, our objective in developing internationally is to provide opportunities for our lifters, both to compete internationally, but opportunities for lifters internationally to be a part of us and to be a part of our system. And in essence, to have a level playing field, but also to have fun. And if you look at some of the meets out there that are occurring internationally, we've succeeded with that. And because of that, we expect to continue to grow internationally. People want to be a part of USA Powerlifting. They want the opportunity to come here and compete. They want the opportunity to have fair and let me highlight this because it can't be highlighted enough, fun competition, where there's excitement present and where announcing is exciting and where lifters are hyped and they really get their day in the sun. And so internationally, we continue to grow. We continue to add countries probably every week, and Wade can probably say more about it, but every week we have inquiries from members in countries that want to put on competitions. We are assisting them in terms of developing their own infrastructure, and it continues to grow. We have competitions, obviously, which are very successful in Australia and South Korea. We have smaller competitions in other Asian countries and more coming, I will tell you that. We have a very successful Euro Tour They're going to add another country shortly to that, and maybe two, and maybe three. Discussions are ongoing with three different countries at the moment to make a viable Euro tour. And I'll tell you, that leads to a continental championship. And so we just continue to build carefully on it and invite people to come and be a part of it and support them as best we can.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks for teeing up Wade. We'll get to his portion of this now. Any parting words for our members and listeners?
Really, I guess just a thank you to everybody out there. The fact that we continue to be so successful really is a tribute to the lifters and the coaches and the meet directors who believe in us, who are really attuned to the needs of the lifters at the local level. That really is the most significant part of USA Powerlifting, and who want to serve and to support the lifters out there. So my thanks, and on behalf of the executive committee, thank you for everything you do.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for leading the way, everyone. Well, Larry, thanks for your time. And everyone else, stay tuned. Here comes Wade. Joined today by the International Committee Chair, Wade Johnson. Wade, how's it going, man?
Man, it's going well. It's busy, and it's great to be with you again, Ryan. And I got to say it, for those that don't know, I didn't know until we were talking before we got on. You're a new father, and so congratulations to you and your family. What an awesome, awesome thing. And yeah, it is literally the blessing that keeps giving and blessing. So very excited for you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And to all of the listeners who know me, love me, have seen me grow up in USA Powerlifting, what a cool experience to be a dad and, you know, to have a little powerlifter not walking around yet, but you just start imagining one day, you know, he'll be on the platform, of course, doing other sports, but there's no avoiding he's going to want to try to at least do what dad did, right?
Of course.
And that's pretty cool, too. Well, on that note, I appreciate that, Wade, and I know you have a lot to talk about. So for the folks listening that may not be familiar with what Wade's been working on the last couple of years, he's really been at the forefront of our efforts to expand internationally. So all the news that you see of us in Asia and Europe is by Wade's hard work. And so I know he has some news on that front. And to all our international listeners who have joined us, we're grateful to have you and excited for the future that I'm sure Wade is about to talk about. So Wade, what's on top of mind right now for you?
Well, it was announced recently that it's on the website that there's been a change to the 2025 calendar. And, you know, so we're going to see the Arnold happen where it happens. Nationals is going to be June. And then at the end of the year is where the World Cup events are going to move to. And what those events will be, like this year, Masters World Cup, which was the first cup event that we launched, is going to be in Memphis in May. And then that will follow up. It will be in the latter part of the year, November, December of 2025. The Open World Cup will be the same. We'll offset them, you know, by probably a month. And then the Bench Press World Cup will probably be, you know, we're still sorting some things out. We're looking at late October into early November. Now, here's what I can tell you. We're going to go through a bid process for 2026, and I'm working with several people that are much, much smarter than me on how to do that bid process. And what we want to do is launch that as soon as these meets come online for 2025. And then that way we're at the point to where we're starting to become more proactive than reactive, you know, over the past couple of years. You know, the end of 2021, we go through the divorce with the IPF. I think we've done well in the manner in which we've moved forward. In the short 2 years is not really a long time in the scheme of things. And if you think about it, I think we signed on with Australia roughly May of 2022. And at the end of last year, just as an example of growth, Not only, I mean, it's been very much talked about stateside, you know, how our membership, as we're approaching doubling it, and may very likely will at the end of this year in 3 years. But we're now over 1,000 members in Australia. You know, you go from never having an international meet, they sign on, you know, we're not even 2 years from them signing on. I think we have 16 meets as of the end of February. There were 16 meets sanctioned in Australia alone for 2024. So, and followed closely by Korea, which I think has 9, could be more. It's unless I had numbers right in front of me, I get copied on all the international sanctions that come in, and it's every week they're coming in. And more countries obviously are coming on. You know, it's no secret that, you know, you and I are really elated to see Mark Giles come on with England and Ollie and the rest of his, you know, look, we're all,
of course,
Mark is a great buddy, you know, and you know what, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, I don't know that you know this, but Mark's mother just passed away. And so condolences to Mark and the Giles family, and, you know, Godspeed to his mother. You know, if knowing the guy that Mark is, his mother, she left the world better than she came into it. And so God rest her soul, yeah. And, you know, and prayers and great thoughts and good vibes to his family. He's in good spirits. I've been checking on him every couple of days, and you know, he's going to be good to go, but obviously a tough time when you lose a parent. And so we want to send those good vibes and thoughts out to Mark and his family. You know, but he'll be back online pretty quick. We got a lot going on there. The Euro Tour is growing. It's not far. We're not far away from the meet in the Netherlands. We just did. So as an example, I was at the Georgia State meet right at the end of February. And just give you an example of our growth. I mean, you've been around for a little bit. I was at the Georgia State meet. It was a 3-day event, over 300 lifters. Wasn't a nationals, wasn't a regional. And I understand Georgia's a big contingency for us. But that's enormous for a state meet. But that's not all. During that weekend, the Euro Tour was in Ireland. So Ireland is on board. Their sanction just came through for their second meet. The same day, Korea had a meet. And also Australia. So while I have no idea. I didn't look what was going on that weekend in USA Powerlifting stateside. But that big meet was going on. And 3 meets across the globe were going on. And yeah. So that's a testament to the growth and the interest in what we're doing organizationally and the mission that we all started with, not just with the international aspect that I'm heavily involved in, but everything that we do. And I think it goes to show, sticking to our guns, what that has done for not only us organizationally, but also for the broadness of our membership.
Yeah, the numbers don't lie, right? So you say I've been around a bit, and I just looked at, it's 2024, so I'm actually on my 15th year here in USA Powerlifting, and I'm really proud to say I've grown up in the organization. I did my first meet when I just turned 18, and what a journey it's been. When I started, there was only 28 or 2,900 members, and you know, we're over 10x that now, and that is just insane, and it keeps going up. I'm shocked every time I see the reports.
Well, yeah,
I can't believe it. The exponential growth. Yeah,
I took some notes just where we are. At the end of February, we had 16,862, which is crazy. And that's ahead of last year's pace. That was a record that was faster than bigger than the previous year. That was also
it's nonstop. And we finished last year, we finished 23 with over 30,000 members. And so if we're already at this pacing at the end of February, who knows? And I'm seeing it as a state chair now, the volume of new lifters getting involved and jumping into USA Powerlifting, it blows my mind. Our Arizona state meets are sold out almost immediately. And I know that's the case across the country. You know, we're going to be over 500 sanctioned events just in the United States this year. And so internationally, hearing that we already have 16 in Australia, they already have 1,000 members, it's actually quite shocking. And I don't think people appreciate how huge that exactly is when you look at the competing organizations globally. Don't do anywhere near that, right? It's pretty shocking.
You know, it's one of those things. Kudos to the membership that stayed patient. I kind of hesitate to say loyal. I understand, you know, that people, you know, want to do what they want to do, and I don't disrespect that at all. But for the people that said, you know, I believe in what we're doing as an organization, and that we believe the organization is looking after the membership, and I firmly believe that. It's how I work, you know, and, you know, we're on the cusp now of where we have, you know, real international competition. You know, the very first year we had the Australian Open that allowed people the opportunity. Now we're going to have a bench press World Cup in October in England, you know, and this is two and a half years after, hey, you're voted out and, you know, we don't want to test at the local level anymore. Kudos to leadership and the membership for, you know, digging their heels in the sand collectively and getting us where we are today. You know, I told Larry 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. I think we can do it, and I think we can do it better.
Yeah, and I think we will, especially having this kind of growth in just a few years. I mean, insane. I'm stoked for Mark and what he's bringing. The rest of Europe, Asia is a surprise to me. I didn't think that would be a space where we were going to have all the attention and growth that we have, you know? Any thoughts on why Asia is kind of a huge growth spot for us?
I think it's one of those things where I think it's a global thing. I mean, you're not surprised by the people that you and I know. You know, you're not surprised by Mark being interested in what we're doing and becoming part of it. But I think globally, the biggest thing with all the people that I meet with is the lack of drug testing. I mean, that is literally the first thing. And then governance and, you know, a clear, you know, and effective plan on, you know, where we're going, you know, in the future. And with the continued growth, I think people are buying. The numbers don't lie. Here's the thing: the facts just don't lie. You know, we can't dispute it. We're doing out of meat testing internationally. We're catching people. I mean, it happens. Not only in meat, we have done out of now that is. That falls to the feet of Joanne Craig and the great work that she.
Shout out Joanne.
You know, yeah. And I absolutely adore. She and I have a great working relationship and work really well together. And she is so sharp and so smart. And I'm not blowing smoke.
She's patient. You know how many times she's had to email me to do a drug test because I don't check my email? Like, Ryan, you need to do this. And like, that's just me. Imagine that at scale across 50 states. Like, angel for her patients and following up with people.
And she works really hard. And she has all this experience that is vital to what we do. For sure. And people see that, you know, when you're out of meat testing internationally and you catch people. You know, you never want to have a positive test, but it happens, and sometimes it happens for odd reasons, you know. But you know, the bottom line is that we are testing not only at the local level, but we're testing at all levels, and I think it's ultimately a preventative, and it provides, you know, as fair a platform as can be provided in the tested atmosphere.
Yeah. I'm curious. So I'm not curious. I just have a statement and I want to know your thoughts. So for those of you listening that have never had the chance to compete internationally, you're about to have a huge opportunity to do so. And one of the things that really resonated with me when I did a podcast with Mark late last year was the point of like, why would we keep others from experiencing what we've experienced competing internationally? It doesn't have to be this only this person gets to go, the one person. Right. And of course, the prestige and the accolades and being the absolute best lifter on the planet is important. And we're going to have those people, but we're also going to have an opportunity for those who want to travel and compete and represent their country in their own way. And I think that is a unique value proposition that no other powerlifting organization has ever considered, because people have the means, they just haven't had the path. And now we're connecting that path to those with the means. And I think that's going to be a big draw for people in the future as well.
Well, and we're trying to continue to grow that. Probably, you know, we had to go a path of how do we ultimately create a world championships? How do we cultivate that? And that's, I had an idea. I created the Cup Series, and we've been able to run with it. And so those will ultimately morph into our world championships. So what does that mean for the Cup events? That remains to be seen, but I can assure you there's a lot of ideas. And one of the ideas is that we continue to cultivate the Euro Tour with all the countries that is involved, that are involved with that, but that we keep cultivating. So one of the things that will happen, as an example, is in 2025, to coincide with the calendar of our nationals, we have asked for one of the meet directors in the Asian community to run an Asian Pacific Championships. And so there will be opportunity there. We want to continue doing the Australian Open and then, you know, looking at other places. As a matter of fact, as I was waiting for you to come on, I was emailing a contact in Spain. And so there's more. We're talking to Vietnam. We expect that meet to happen in November, sometime later this year in Pakistan. I mean, these are countries that you would have never thought, you know, that this would take place. And what I want to let everybody know is the amount of time and hours that it takes to get those wheels rolling and get everything in place. It doesn't seem like a lot of stuff when you look at it on paper.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is.
But, you know, I mean, look how long it took, you know, for things to work out and to get it right, you know, for Mark to come on board. Yeah, I mean, I talked to him the very first, he was literally the first person that I called. So, you know, that we're talking almost 2 years to get to that point. You know, so and look at it now. I mean, you knew that Ireland and England were going to be the gateway, you know, into Europe. And it's sure. All it's done is grow like wildfire. So
what do people have to look forward to in the 24, 25, 26? You've kind of touched on it, but like, what are the standout things that excite you being so close to this? And, you know, things you're unable to share. Like, what are some of the things people should be excited for?
Well, I think the initial excitement is, you know, we've had a little bit of negative feedback with, you know, well, the qualifying totals aren't very high, you know, and things of that nature, but you've got to cultivate it. You know, we're literally, there's a season to sow and a season to harvest. You know, we're into technically year three, as I use air quotes.
Yeah.
And for us to be where we are, you know, I think, again, is quite remarkable. And so what I'm excited to see is that these events grow into the point that now we're starting to see structure evolve into countries having their nationals and qualifying ultimately on down the road, where we have to have a qualifying total for our world championships. Now, is that going to take on the model of like we've done in the past of, you know, of national teams? I foresee that potentially happening, but ultimately here is the prospect that excites me the most at that level, at the, let's say the elite 1% world level, is what we have seen. Let's be honest. And I've been quoted with this a lot. You go to open worlds, let's say Raw IPF worlds, just as an example, every time I've been, how many contenders per weight class? What's the average? Three.
Well, are you, when you say contenders, do you mean those who could medal, or like those that are in the weight class?
Those that could win.
Oh, well, two per weight class?
That's what I'm saying. So yeah. What if I can create a situation, and when I say I mean organization, what if we can collectively create a situation over, let's say, the next 5 years, that you have a flight of 15 lifters in an open weight class that represent, let's say conservatively, those 15 lifters are in the top 25 in the world that year in total. The way that people will have to coach, the way that people will compete, will change. Because we all know who the contenders are. And you know the traditional way of making attempt selections will change, because you make a mistake. If there's a tweak during the lift or somebody gets injured, you can go from being in on the podium to being outside the top 10. Yeah, I don't want to see it be a situation where there's only two or three contenders. What if there are three lifters from Great Britain? What if there are five lifters from Ireland? If they represent the top 15 to 25 totals, not only does that make it a much more exciting meet for the lifters and for the coaches, now you have something spectator-wise that is exciting. Everybody wants to see, you know, your country's lifters do well. Now it's a dogfight. From the very beginning, everything is a dogfight to the end. And as a competitor, as a coach, as a gym owner, as a guy that is a committee chair, and then just a general fan, that to me is exciting. Organizationally, creating more and more opportunity for the membership that is not the 1% to travel, to experience an international platform, that excites me. And then to see places that we've not had a big foothold, even stateside, to start seeing it grow. Those are the things. The grassroots level still is something I'm very excited about. Even in, you know, what we've done in our state is an example, because of how we're spread geographically. We have representation in West Tennessee, in East Tennessee, and in Middle Tennessee, and we all work together collectively to try to make sure we get more coverage across the state. And so, and these are the things, the way we have done things since the inception of USA Powerlifting is going to have to start evolving. And that excites me. You know, we've gone from, well, like you said it yourself, when you started 15 years ago, say 3,000 members, you know, we're 12 times that now. And so what does that put us, you know, infrastructure wise, we're scrambling, not because we're not doing a good job. It's just, you know, we're growing exponentially.
Growing pains, man. Yeah.
And these are great problems to have and to, you know, that hopefully we're doing a good job meeting those challenges, and the growth is going to be positive. Those are the things that excite me.
Oh, well said. And I want to remind everyone, you just heard Wade talk about a bunch of things, a bunch of exciting things, and give us some grace. You know, I go online sometimes, and it just frustrates me to see the number of people who, everyone's a critic, right? And it's very easy to point how the strong man stumbles, as the saying goes. But we're doing some really incredible things and propping up an international freaking federation, basically, in such a short time period. Give us some grace, y'all. Complaining about the qualifying totals. Do you remember what the qualifying totals when Raw Nationals was around in 2010 or 11? Like, compare that to now. It's only a matter of time before the qual. Yeah, like, come on, have some sense, have a heart, give us some grace. You guys have a great time at our local competitions. You have a great time at our national competitions. This is a volunteer effort. We're doing really amazing things. And thank you, Wade, and to everyone who's involved. Joanne, I mean, I can't list enough names of folks who are involved. You see them in all the events, but thank you from everyone, because you don't hear it enough. You know, thank you.
Well, you know, I'm really also excited about, as a matter of fact, I should be meeting with Josh Rohr and Paulie Steinman in the morning as we look to integrate more and more of the Pro Series into what we're doing internationally. And again, I mean, there's just so many things all going on at once. And you have to understand the people that are sitting on the executive committee and all the committees that I sit on, and you know, they all have full-time jobs, or and you know, most of us own a gym and a training service, and you know, so it's extremely. I was up at 3:30 this morning doing a video review on an app, you know, for a client base. And then downstairs, I'm coaching people. We built a new platform, and then I'm off to my, you know, 9-to-5 job. You know, I scampered home in Nashville, rush hour traffic, so I could meet with you. And like I said, while I'm waiting, I'm on email, you know, and I've got, there's this whole list of notes of stuff that, you know, that I've got to work on. And that's every day. And I'm but one. It ain't just me, you know. And so getting the integration of the Pro Series has become a big priority for us. And I think that's something, I mean, who knows? It's one of those things that I would be foolish to say I know exactly where that's going to head. But I think what it is and where it's headed is two big things.
Absolutely. You know, I think, have we addressed everything you wanted to talk about?
Just know that there's a lot more stuff in the works. We're going to be announcing that. So your Open World Cup and your Masters World Cup will be going international in 2025. It will not be stateside. So for all the people that wanted to travel, remember, October is Bench Worlds. It's going to be in England. The entry is already up and people are already entering it. And let me cycle back, because I know we're on the clock here, but When we launched the Cup Series with Masters World Cup in Arlington, Texas last year, we had roughly 75 lifters, three countries represented. Had you told me when I was leaving Arlington that the following year in Memphis, we were going to have double that, say 150 lifters, I would have been really happy with that type of growth over a year. We sold out. It has been sold out. We capped it at 240 and it sold out. I'll ask you, how many Masters events have you ever seen where weight classes are 8, 9 deep? Many, 4, 5, 6. I know that there's 3 classes that are 9 deep in the Masters World Cup.
Yeah, that's unheard,
which
that's,
is insanity. That's
That don't make no sense.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know. So there's a lot of things where, as the, I sit on the Masters committee, and we're pushing a lot to do things with Masters as well. You know, I'm not going to disclose that now, because I know the EC is taking our proposal and voting on that. So we'll see where that goes. But there's going to be growth there as well. There's no way around it. We're going to have to. And so the big thing going forward, what I'd love to see people do, man, be a judge. Go and help at these meets. That is really the lifeblood of what happens with us across the nation, is having people that can judge, having people that can spot and help at meets. And we are already over 450 sanctioned events, and we're not even at the end of March yet. That's terrifying to me. I'm not lying.
I don't like that. Makes me nervous.
Well, that what? Makes me nervous too. Let me give you the number. Yes, 2024, we already have 450 sanctioned events. We are already sanctioning events for 2025.
That doesn't compute.
Well, what? Yes.
Okay. I should act like I know that and just play the new dad card here, but that's shocking.
Based on what we've been seeing, you know, I remember I went to the Southeast Regionals. It was in Charlotte, and mm-hmm. I was talking to JT, and she goes, you know, it's crazy. I can't remember what time of year it was. It's all a blur. But she goes, you know, we're running these events, and you can't run enough meets anymore.
No, they're all selling out. So much demand, you're never going to meet the demand.
And so, you know, that's going to be one of the challenges is how do we, one, not necessarily maintain the growth, but foster the growth and cultivate, you know, the infrastructure that we're going to need to meet the demand. It's It's going to be interesting, to say the least. And I think that's why what we're doing internationally, not just offering a world event, but offering multiple events for your entire membership. You know, I think, again, it is what is going to separate us and is separating us from the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Wade, thanks for the knowledge dump and update for everyone. I can imagine folks are excited.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think they are. And we're going to have more things to come. I think I'm going to interview Larry soon as well. So the whole organization will get an update from the president. And yeah, exciting times. March, and we have 450 sanctioned events. Look online at the calendar, folks. Find a meet near you to compete. We'll see you on the platform.